And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
A clergyman who described the Clapfer captain Sir Tom Moore as the cult of white British nationalism is being investigated by Church of England officials. Captain Tom, a World War II veteran, raised £32 million for the NHS during the first national lockdown by walking 1,000 laps of his garden. Following the 100-year-old's death last Tuesday, people across the country clapped to commemorate his life and achievements. But a London-based reverend was criticised for unacceptable, insensitive and ill-judged behaviour after criticising Captain Tom on social media in remarks which have prompted an internal investigation. In a now-deleted tweet which sparked a fierce backlash, Jarell Robinson Brown, 29, wrote, "The cult of Captain Tom is a cult of white British nationalism. I will offer prayers for the repose of his kind and generous soul, but I will not be joining the national clap." The Reverend Robinson Brown, who was last month appointed to serve in the parish of All Hallows by the Tower, the oldest church in the City of London, later offered an unreserved apology for the insensitive timing and content of my tweet regarding the clap for Captain Tom. He also deleted his Twitter account. He said he had now read and would sign the Church of England's Digital Charter, a voluntary pledge that the clergy is encouraged to adhere to in order to help social media and the web more widely positive places for conversations to happen. Reverend Robinson Brown, who is black, has since been the subject of racist abuse online. More than 6,500 people have signed a Change.org petition calling on the Church of England to remove him from his post on the basis he is a divisive and damaging figure that has insulted the memory of a national treasure and true hero of this country. A spokesman for the Diocese of London said, "Jarell Robinson Brown's comments regarding Captain Sir Tom Moore were unacceptable, insensitive and ill-judged. The fact that he immediately removed his tweet and subsequently apologised does not undo the hurt he has caused, not least to Captain Tom's family. Nor do Jarell's actions justify the racist abuse he is now receiving." The statement confirmed that an investigation led by the Archdeacon of London was underway. The Reverend Robinson Brown, a former Methodist minister and chaplain at King's College London, converted to Anglicanism and is currently training to become a priest in the Church of England. He was appointed to his current role as a curate last month by the Right Reverend Dame Sarah Mullaly, the Bishop of London. According to his King's College London profile, Reverend Robinson Brown studied classical music as a pianist and organist at the London College of Music. He is the author of a book, Black, Gay, British, Christian, Queer, Church and the Famine of Grace. In previous social media posts, he has criticised ignorant white Christian men and growing debate over LGBTQ rights within the Church of England. A payslip made from a sheet of papyrus shows a Roman soldier was left penniless 1,900 years ago after the military took out fees for certain items. The document was made out to a Gaius Messias who participated in the siege of Masada that was one of the last battles during the First Jewish-Roman War. The receipt shows Messias received 50 denarii as his stipend, but fees for barley, money, food, and military equipment were taken out that totaled to the amount of his full pay. Because part of the deductions taken were for fodder, food for livestock, and experts believe he was a legionary cavalryman and had to feed his horse and mule. The payslip was found where the Romans may have set up camp during the siege of Masada and is dated for after the war, suggesting it was payment for participation. The document's translation is available in the database of military inscriptions and papyri of early Roman Palestine as first reported on by Task and Purpose. It reads, "The fourth consular of Imperator Vespasianus Augustus. Accounts, salary, Gaius Messias, son of Gaius, of the tribe Fabia, from Beirut. I received my stipendium of 50 denarii, out of which I paid barley money, 16 denarii. Unreadable, food expenses, 20-something, denarii, boots, 5 denarii, leather strappings, 2 denarii, linen tunic, 7 denarii, and the total of deductions is 50 denarii, Messias's entire payslip." It is interesting to observe how much of his pay went to mandatory expenses, clothing, food, etc. He seems effectively penniless after payday, reads notes left by the team involved with the database. Masada is located 12 miles east of Arad and is Israel's most popular paid tourist attraction. It was once an ancient fortification atop an isolated rock plateau overlooking the Dead Sea. Herod the Great built the massive structure between 37 and 31 BCE. During the First Jewish-Roman War, which started in 66 AD through 73 AD, rebellions sparked by the Jews against the Roman Empire that had taken over Israel, according to the History Channel. Also known as the Great Revolt, the battle resulted in the destruction of Jewish towns, displacement of people, and the appropriation of land for Roman military use. When Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD, the remaining rebels relocated to Herod's fortress in Masada. The Romans followed shortly after and surrounded Masada with about 8,000 soldiers at the base of the mountain. When it became clear the Romans were going to take the fortress, the 960 Jews, excluding two women and five children, took their lives rather than become slaves of their enemy. Flavius Josephus was a Roman Jewish historian in the first century and born in Jerusalem. Josephus wrote down accounts of what he called the Jewish War, including what he saw at the siege of Masada. He said, they had died in the belief that they had not left a soul of them alive to fall into Roman hands. The Romans advanced to the assault, seeing none of the enemy, but on all sides the awful solitude and flames within and silence. They were at a loss to conjecture what had happened here, encountering the mass of slain, instead of exulting as over enemies, they admired the nobility of their resolve. Masada had lain hidden from the world until it was rediscovered in 1828. As a volunteer for 25 years, she had taught at Sunday school, led the choir, run the food bank, served the tea, and crucially paid £50 a month by direct debit to keep the church in the village alive. The congregation had shrunk to 25. The pressure is on those left to stump up the £30,000 that's required every year through personal donations and fundraising to pay for the upkeep of their church and the privilege of a vicar split between four other parishes. So when the volunteer, who asked not to be named, heard that the Church of England intended to prune the clergy and recruit middle managers with elaborate titles and salaries of more than £50,000 to do some heavenly thinking on how to revive its flagging fortunes, there was anger in the ranks. The church says that the dwindling numbers and financial pressures leave it no choice but to abolish posts when clergy retire. It moves some vicars out of struggling parishes and into bigger communities, for example in inner cities or suburban housing estates where they may not have been a church before, in an effort to survive. The Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell, said there were no plans for the wholesale dismantling of parish networks. To suggest otherwise is mischievous and misleading, he said, but it is highly likely that some dioceses are having to reduce the overall number of stipendiary clergy. No one wants to do this, but our priority is to make sure that it is done prudently and sensitively. The Diocese of Chelmsford, where Cottrell was the bishop for 10 years, is offering a salary of between £85,000 and £90,000 for a new chief executive, but will be cutting 61 parish clergy posts by the end of the year. It's heartbreaking and very short-sighted, said the volunteer, who believes it risks alienating some of the worshippers who gave £610 million to the church in 2019. Communities that lose their vicar might start rethinking those direct debits, said the volunteer, who lives in the Diocese of St Albans in Hertfordshire. People don't mind giving if we've got a vicar. What we don't want is for the diocese to create new jobs that don't mean anything to us, she said. A vicar's basic stipend is about £27,000, although that excludes costs such as the housing provided. Oversight roles advertised by the church include four associate archdeacon mission and transition enablers in Sheffield, each with a salary of £35,000, a vision programme manager in the West Midland, £45,000, a part-time justice, peace and integrity of creation office coordinator in Southwark, £30,000, a mission enabler in Oxford, £30,000, a growth officer in St Albans, £40,000, and a director of church revitalisation in Leeds, £52,000. We don't know what those jobs are, the volunteer said. We never see the people in those jobs. The person you see is the vicar. That's what gets people to church. How often are the people in those overview roles going to meet their flock? That's what's going to break our church. What's the point of having a growth officer if there's nothing to grow? The Reverend Marcus Walker, rector of the Priory Church at St. Bartholomew the Great in London, said, "It looks as if the Church of England is falling into the trap that so many struggling institutions fall into, which is spending its scarce resources on middle management. I don't think that's ever worked. The thing people love the Church of England for is the work that goes on in the parish, the vicar in the pub, being around, being part of life." He added that you've got to be on another planet if you think the answer to a crisis of faith is a multiplication of bureaucracy. There is no central record of the number of managers compared with the 19,700 clergy, but a church spokesman estimated that 10% of roles were non-clergy. The church said that the number of people being ordained into stipendiary ministry this year would be 43% higher than 8 years ago. The Reverend Tiffer Robinson thinks it's too easy to blame middle managers. He is the rector of 4 rural parishes in Suffolk, where the largest church has a regular congregation of about 45 and the smallest about 10. Zoom services have attracted 2 or 3 recruits, but yes, he said, we will need have some people who won't come back. We've definitely lost a few. However, he's not panicking yet. There's no evil, nefarious master plan to cut clergy. No one wants the parishes to die. There are no bishops rubbing their hands with glee saying, oh goody, I can kill off the parishes. He suggests that creative new roles such as mission enablers and growth officers might be just what the church needs. They're being put there to come up with a plan to grow. It's noble to want a more flexible, agile institution. My worry is that some dioceses are panicking and cutting too soon. Then they end up losing income and making the decline worse. Canon Dr. Nicholas Cranfield, the vicar of All Saints Blackheath in South London, is worried that the personal connection between priest and parishioners is being lost. People want to see doors open and a priest inside. I open the church at 8 a.m. and close it at 5 p.m. day in, day out. I don't know who will need it. Sometimes visitors will pop a note in to say, thank you, today was the first anniversary of my wife's death, or can you please pray for me, I've lost my child. If the door is locked, they can't do that, no matter how many people are sitting in central office. He questioned why so many management roles were being duplicated across the diocese. Unable to hold a service to offer comfort to people during the first lockdown, Cranfield made a point of going alone into the empty building every morning. I ended up ringing the bell so that the church wasn't completely locked down and silent. At least people could hear I was still here, he said. Concerns were raised over a proposed law in Denmark requiring religious organisations, including churches, to submit translated copies of sermons in languages other than Danish to the government before they are preached. The proposed Act on Sermons in Languages Other than Danish, due to be considered by the Danish Parliament in early February, would require that religious organisations translate into Danish and submit all sermons, talks and public addresses given in any other language. The Danish government says the bill's purpose is to create greater openness about religious preaching in non-Danish languages. As well as raising concerns over religious liberty and potential state censorship, the proposed law would place additional financial and administrative burdens on churches forced to undertake the process of scripting and translating all public sermons. It is thought that the proposal is aimed at curbing extremist Islamic preaching in Arabic, but the scope of the draft law is so wide that it could have an adverse effect on Christian churches in Denmark, which worship in a non-Danish tongue. These include long-standing English, German and Romanian-speaking churches, as well as the many Faroese churches in Denmark. Faroese is considered mother tongue in Denmark and is also recognised as a national language that can be used in public affairs in the Danish kingdom, specifically in the Faroe Islands, an autonomous country that is also part of the Kingdom of Denmark. Faroese MP Sirdur Skaal has criticised the proposed law as being completely unacceptable discrimination against Faroese-speaking citizens. Skaal flagged that if enacted, the law would be in violation of Article 70 of the Constitution, which states that no person shall, for reasons of his creed or descent, be deprived of access to complete enjoyment of his civic and political rights, nor shall he, for such reasons, evade compliance with any common civic duty. The Ecumenical Conference of European Churches, the CEC, has written to the Danish government arguing that compulsory translation legislation will be an unreasonably negative signal in relation to religion and the role of religious communities in society, particularly in view of the long and regionally beneficial history of minority churches in Denmark and other parts of Europe, including German Lutheran churches in Hungary, Romanian Orthodox churches in France, Anglican churches in Sweden, and Danish Lutheran churches in Spain. The CEC added that the law would taint the image of Denmark as an open, liberal and free nation built on a Christian heritage of individual rights and duties, and pointed to the European Convention on Human Rights, the ECHR, to which Denmark has acceded. Article 9, paragraph 2 states that every citizen has freedom to manifest one's religions or beliefs. And finally, last Sunday, Pastor Jamie got up in the pulpit and apologised for the band-aid on his face. He said, "I was thinking about my sermon while shaving and cut my face." Afterward, the treasurer found a note in the collection plate which read, "Next time, Pastor Jamie, think about your face and cut the sermon."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.